Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by Coronation.com, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm your host, Greg Mahochko. Joining me as always, he is our founder, he is our fearless leader, he is one half of the oldest podcast duo known to man, if you caught this week's history lesson with he and Todd Wolverton. He's our beloved John Damn Johnston. Hello, John. How are you,
sir? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. In familiar territory.
Where are you at?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Wow. Kansas City. I haven't been to Kansas City in a long time.
I have only ever driven past Kansas City. I'll be honest with you, with the one exception of when I was 15 years old. And I was driving to Colorado with my folks. The only other times I've been past Kansas City were on trips to and from Nebraska. Went living there, moving out there, moving back. And then when I was living out there, trips back home, and then back out to Nebraska. And I've driven out there twice since I've been a non-resident. Once was for a visit up to Shadron, and the other was for friend of the show Josh's wedding out in Scottsbluff Gearing area. So but this is the first time I've ever actually stayed in Kansas City. And Wednesday night our group had drinks and snacks or appetizers type things at the World War I Memorial. A really tremendous experience, do a little socialize, and then we got a tour of the memorial and got to go up. It was about 8:30, and they were still letting us go up the tower that's there at the World War I Museum. And I looked, the tower's supposed to close at like 4 or 4:30. So they kept it open at night for us, which I thought was pretty nice of them. So I had a good time. This is a work conference. So my wife and my three children, ages 5 and under, all back in Illinois.
So what did you learn about World War I?
There was a gentleman by the name of Archduke Franz Ferdinand who was assassinated. No.
You're just starting at the beginning, huh?
you sit there and you learn about there was a German, I don't know if chancellor is the right phrase, but after the sinking of the Lusitania, when America got pissed off and said, you need to, told Germany essentially stop attacking our, non-military merchant vessels, things like that. And Germany did that for a while. And then one German by the name of Zimmerman, it's like, you know what? America's not a threat. They have maxed out their military industry. Even if they enter the war, they're not going to play a factor. And then America entered the war. One of the guys who was not a museum volunteer or tour guide or anything like that, it's like, well, America was only in World War I for like 18 months. I said, yeah, because when you want to end a war, you bring in America. We are 2-0 in world wars. Come on.
I find World War I fascinating.
It's tremendous. And the over such a short period of time, the speed at which military technology advanced.
Yeah.
And especially when the way the World War I Memorial is set up is, or museum, is you go in kind of on the right side. It is in a chronological order. So you go in on the right side and it's circular. And they have, like everything that is, Europe involvement, Russia, Great Britain, Germany, the World War I. And then they have one kind of multimedia centerpiece that is, these are the factors that played into America's involvement. And then they have the other part is America's involvement. And you see that here's what the Europeans were doing. And then on the other side, this is what America's doing. America had, we had some geniuses working in our military industrial don't know, complex, however you want to phrase it, at that time. So, yeah, it was just – it was – and for me, one of my favorite parts, honestly, was just going up to the tower because it was dark. It's Kansas City at night, so you can get a real nice view of the downtown area. And it's just really peaceful up there. And it's 217 feet high. There's no enclosure. So it's all open air. We were advised and requested to not spit off the tower, also not to jump off the tower. So
don't spit or jump.
Don't spit or jump if you can avoid it. So no, those aspects just made it really. I probably could spend another hour. You could spend a day in there, and I think because of all the text that accompanies all the artifacts, things like that, you're not going to be able to read every word. But you know, it was. It was. I didn't realize the Germans had submarines in World War One, so that's something I learned.
Yep.
So that's World War One in a nutshell. They killed the Archduke. They pissed off America, and America ended the war.
We'll leave it there.
The Cliff Notes version.
What else is going on?
Barbecue.
I think we're all working so much. It's, you know, this week is it's the 50th anniversary of the Game of the Century. Did you know that?
Yeah. I did know that. Yeah.
Did who's Spencer Rattler's roommate?
I don't think it's Jordan Westerkamp.
No. That's the connection I was looking for though.
And it's weird because I, you know, clearly as much as my, my colleagues and coworkers give me shit for being old, I will be the next to cross into age 40, which I know for you, John, seems like an eternity ago. but I, you know, I feel old. Even though I'm one of the newer ones in this business, I suppose. I got the gray hair to show it, but like, I wasn't around for the Game of the Century, you know, so everything that I have is all, YouTube clips, maybe some ESPN Classic or, you know, ESPN specials on it and stories from, you know, the generation before me. So thank you, John, for being old.
Does it mean anything to you?
No. I'm sure I'm going
to
catch.
It's
some
okay. You don't have to apologize for that.
Well,
it's a fair answer.
But
why?
I liked.
Now you're like placating. That's what you're doing.
I understand its importance. I understand its significance. In two power programs of the time, like I do, and I get it, and so I have appreciation for it. But I struggle to, you know, I think before I was born, I'm a Steelers fan. Everybody knows that, but I don't go back and watch, you know, like the Steelers Super Bowls of the 70s. I watch and my appreciation of the game evolves. As the game evolves, I suppose. Maybe that's not the best way to answer the question. I don't even know. But let me rephrase. My favorite form of football is the football that I got introduced to. So we're talking mid-90s, you know. And we've talked about this before, that's not even Husker football. Like I wasn't, you know, a 90s Husker football fan because I wasn't a college football fan, you know. I remember my dad cheered for Nebraska over Miami. I remember that. Vividly, he's like, we don't cheer for Miami. You know, Nebraska's from the Midwest. You know, there was no, there wasn't like an SEC loyalty or anything like that. Obviously, you know, living in Illinois, but even going back to like, I remember in knowing my folks, he's like, Nebraska's, and you and Tom talked about it on the Five Heart special earlier this week is the, Nebraska's like values, you know, both as a team and as a state, aligned better with my folks than those dirty, rotten shithead fucks from Miami.
Do you know anything about the history of Oklahoma Sooner football?
No. I mean, I could try to, like, BS, be like, I know some names, but I don't, you know, like, if somebody gave me, like, somebody would have to educate me, you know.
Okay, and again, but here's the thing. Since we started out with history, let's go in that direction. If when you look at Nebraska and Oklahoma, they're very similar. And it's not because they're rivals and stuff like that. It's because they're both states. I mean, if you didn't have Nebraska football to think about Nebraska, what would you think about Nebraska? What would the nation say? Oh, Nebraska, they're known for what?
As from football or just the state?
No, if Nebraska football didn't exist, what would people in Florida say? Oh, Nebraska, they're known for?
I can't imagine that they think of anything. You know, if Nebraska football doesn't exist, then Nebraska's biggest export probably is Omaha steaks.
Right. Nebraska beef. And it used to be our license plate, Nebraska beef. On the license plate before it was like the Cornhusker state. Now, and Oklahoma, if Oklahoma football didn't exist, what would you think about in Oklahoma? Would you?
Nothing. like nothing, yeah. Nothing stands out. And I'm sure I'm going to piss off somebody listening to this, whether they're an Oklahoma fan or a Nebraska fan or somebody that lives in that state in the middle. That might be a fan of one of the two. But, like, I feel like Oklahoma is a lot like Kansas in that from a not – let's, like, take college athletics out of the equation or Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, things like that. From a non-athletics standpoint, there's nothing really remarkable about Oklahoma, is there?
It was one of the last states in the nation.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Do you know why?
They fought it.
No, it's because where we pushed all the Indians. And then we decided, well, screw them. We're taking over the land. You know where Boomer Sooner came from, right?
Yes, but I'm going to let you tell all the uneducated listeners out there.
Okay, the Boomer Sooner was they opened up the state to white settlement, basically, and they were supposed to have a cannon go off. At the moment, the settlers could move into the state and start claiming land. And those who left before the cannon went off were called Sooners. And those who waited for the cannon to go off were called Boomers. And therefore, you have Boomer Sooners. And this was what Oklahoma was known for a long time. And Oklahoma themselves decided, we want to be known for something else beside that. And they made a very conscious effort to build a winning football team because they wanted to be known. They wanted something else to be proud about their state for. Mm-hmm. And because when I started Corn Nation, what I decided to do was I started reading just massive amounts of stuff on the history of college football. So, I mean, all the history books, it didn't matter if they were Nebraska history or not. I read about, you know, the foundations, different programs, things like that. And if I remember correctly, their conscious decision resulted in the hiring of one Bud Wilkinson. And you know what? I'll go into him. Head coach at Oklahoma, started in 1947, coached him to a 7-2-1 record. And Bud Wilkinson was known for having a 57-game winning streak. It was a 57-47. It was broken by Nebraska in 1959. But Nebraska and Oklahoma are very similar in the fact that when you look at both those states, they're very, you know, let's be honest about Nebraska. I mean, people, if you go places, people are like, that state's really flat. And, you know, I grew up in the southwestern part of the state where it's all canyons and valleys and stuff, and it's not really flat. But people drive down the interstate, you know, and there's Chimney Rock and there's, you know, the sand hills where you could get lost for miles and basically is the greatest deposit of sand in the Western Hemisphere. I don't know if people know that about the sand hills, but.
So, I mean, you mentioned Chimney Rock. Just up the road from Chimney Rock is Scott's Bluff. But you go into, you know, the north, the panhandle, and I've been extolling the virtues of Shattern State Park for years. Shattern State Park is beautiful. It has winding hills. It has green trees. It's, you know, then you get out just, there's, I believe it is in, Harrison, Nebraska. I'm probably going to get around, but I want to say there's a golf course out there. Maybe it's, I dare not even guess on the, county, which county it is, but if I remember correctly of my limited time out there, there's a golf course where you tee off and you're teeing off right into like just a gorgeous landscape, right from tee box number one. So and people think that Illinois is flat. Illinois is not flat. Yes, it has, you know, plenty of farmland, but you get down south as well into like the, anyway, there's a Garden of the Gods. There's one in Colorado. There's one in Illinois as well. So people just assume things. That's why, because they fly over us, John. I don't know if you know that about people tend to fly over the Midwest and Plain States. And it's frustrating, really. As a lifelong resident of the Midwest, it breaks my heart.
Did you know how old Bud Wilkinson was when he retired from coaching?
I didn't until listening to yours and Todd's podcast earlier this week, because he stepped down at a very young age, and I'll let you give the age, but you indicated that he was on track and had the type of success that had he stuck around, he'd be, you know, like on the Mount Rushmore of college football coaches.
Yeah. He retired at the age of 47.
That's, I mean, exceptionally young.
Okay. Did you watch the Buffalo game?
Of course I did.
What would you take away from it?
I would take away, with your encouragement, it more or less with your pressure, because I was not able to watch the Buffalo game live and do any Facebook lives or anything at halftime. You said, okay, you owe me a post game video, which I recorded Sunday morning. But my biggest takeaway from the Buffalo game is to say that, John, you're right. When we did our pregame predictions ahead of Illinois, you were very thorough in your analysis. You said, you know, Nebraska's likely going to give up two scores. And that's what they did. They didn't give them away because of turnovers this time. But they did, you know, have some costly penalties that took points off the board. Right. So my biggest takeaway was still that mistakes that, you know, may appear minor or, and look, this time around, I was critical of the referees when I did my Sunday morning analysis. But this time around, I'm just put it all out on first street. Like, you have to be aware. And I know, you know, that people say, oh, there's holding in the trenches on every play, and they're probably right. But either figure out how to get away with it better or adjust your technique to, you know, be able to be a productive, you know, offensive lineman without having to hold. Because we're Nebraska, everybody hates us now. I mean, they've hated us. They hated us when we were good. They hate us even more, I think, now that we're bad. So we're not getting the benefit of any doubt is what I'm trying to say. Not in a non-conference game against a MAC opponent. Definitely not in a conference game. We're not getting the benefit of any doubt. So you have to play flawless football. And that's going to be tough this week against the Sooners, because on paper, they're supposed to beat the snot out of us. I think they're a 22.5 point favorite right now on Thursday night ahead of the game. I was sitting there with a coworker where he's like, what's the spread? What's the line? And I didn't know. He looked it up. He's like, there you go, put $100 on Nebraska. And if they win, you'll get, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever. He's like, but you got to put $2,000 on Oklahoma to win $100. I said, I don't have any spare money lying around, and I don't bet period. But I do agree with Frost's assessment earlier this week in that, like, Oklahoma's in a no-win situation, and Nebraska's in a can't-lose situation, because either Nebraska, you know, does what the country, the world expects them to do, and they get, you know, run out of Norman, or they hang in there and put up a hell of a fight, hell of a showing, or they shock the world and win the whole damn thing. Either way, you know, all of the pressure is on Oklahoma, because if Oklahoma doesn't, win by, well, let's say 23 points, 22 and a half points, let's say three scores or more, then it's considered a failure for the Sooners. Again, on paper. Let's go back to Buffalo because I jumped ahead again. The biggest takeaway is that mistakes are still happening. And mistakes happened against Illinois, and it cost us the game. Mistakes happened against Fordham, and you could get away with it. Mistakes happened against Buffalo, and you could get away with it. What I did like from the Buffalo game is that the defense has not given up a touchdown in seven quarters. And that's important, but they're going to have to work overtime, John, because business is about to pick up, as they say.
Well, I guess, you know, I watched the Buffalo game. I watched the first half, and then we actually went to our neighbors who had lived next to us for, like, I don't know, 29 years or something, had moved to south of the Twin Cities by an hour and a half. So we went down to see their place and stayed the night. And I watched rewatched the game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, our offensive line, I thought they'd be better than this. I think he in the first half, it looked like he just ran inside zone and outside zone, ran the same shit over and over, kind of like saying, you know what, we're going to keep – it's kind of like, I don't know, your mom when you were young. We're going to keep doing this until you get it right. You know, and then you'd be like, oh, your piano God, please. Teacher. Yeah, something like that. But I guess never at any time did I think there was any threat of us losing to Buffalo. And I think they recognized that when there were a lot of people that were like, oh, there were one of the better teams in the MAC, and scary, you know, that kind of shit. But I don't know. I guess, you know, what we need to do is beat opponents badly that we're supposed to beat, which was frustrating about the Illinois game, because they got annihilated by Virginia 42 to what, 14? Something like
that. It was not pretty. Yeah,
they got killed.
Well, and the week before that, they lost to University of Texas San Antonio. So yeah. Every time Illinois steps out on the field, it makes Nebraska look worse. The thing is that Nebraska can't worry about that. You know, right. They can't. That's rear view shit. They've got to push forward and, you know, forget about the fact that, you know, that they lost a disappointing season opener against a not good Illinois squad.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So this will be – Oklahoma will be a good measuring stick of what kind of a team we actually have, especially our defense. I think our offense, we all understand that it's kind of – it's a work in progress. You know, one thing that's been interesting, though, is in the Buffalo game, they ran some option plays that were, I don't know, I guess interesting. You know, and people get all like, ooh, they're running the option. It's like the pass. No, fuck the pass. Come on, get over this shit. We don't need things to run because they're in the past. We need an offense that works because it's going to score points and win games.
Yeah.
And probably up to this point, I mean, where I expect Frost to score 40 points a game, his offense anyway, they're scoring about, I don't know, 24, 28. And that's not enough to win games these days. You know, my whole family for the first time is doing our own fantasy football league. And I think it's all a setup so my sons can beat the shit out of me and then make fun of me for the rest of my life. Cause I have no idea what I'm doing fantasy football, but we're watching more NFL football than ever. And earlier tonight, who was it? Chase Young, hit Daniel Jones, I think it was. And I mean, normally you'd look at that and go, well, that was a football play. No, but he landed on top of him with his body weight. And it's a roughing call, you know, and you're like, could we slant this game any more in favor of the offense? So yeah. I think the good news is that I don't remember how many Nebraska penalties were on the defense, but not very many, and not very many throughout the season. So, you know, if we're going to beat Oklahoma, and you know what? It's beat Oklahoma. It's not a hope we stay with them and then we'll get more victory. Now, I'd feel that way if I bet $100 on them, $1,000 or something. I'd be okay with that. I go, yeah, good job. Moral victories. Let's have more of them. But it's screw moral victories. I mean, we're in the fourth fucking year of Scott Frost. This moral victory stuff needs to be shit down a toilet and flushed. So I think it's pretty clear if we're going to beat Oklahoma, our defense is going to have to beat Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler threw some interceptions against who? Tulane. I don't think he's looked particularly sharp. And quite frankly, he's a good quarterback, but he's not a Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray. So, you know, maybe there's something there. Maybe we can pull it out of the ass. And then there's this other kind of, you know, we're all into like conspiracy theories lately. So let's just go with Scott Frost purposely lost to Illinois. And then so he could set up Oklahoma for the big fall when we pull out an offense he's never seen before.
Wait, I have to ask because I love you and you spend a little bit more time in the online sphere than I do. Are people actually saying that?
Well, people are grasping at straws for anything. You know what I mean?
I want to put to rest any notion of that because no coach ever, period. Let me rephrase because I'm putting the punctuation in the wrong spot. No coach is ever going to torpedo a game, period. And they're certainly not going to come back out immediately following the game and say, when they lined up like this, we had to throw out half our playbook.
That's why Scott Frost is a genius.
Oh, my God. If that was the plan and it works and Nebraska beats number four Oklahoma now?
I don't know. What are they?
I think they're still top five. I know because they didn't lose to Tulane. So, they got a scare, but they didn't lose. So, I still think they're a top five team. Three. Okay. So, when was the last time, John? And this is going to be weird being addressed to you because we know that you admittedly have some memory situations. But when was the last time Nebraska beat a top five program?
1964. I don't know. It seems – I don't even know. My God, 38 years it seems like, 602. My dog's next to me. When was the last time Nebraska beat a top five program?
73 dog years.
She said 1964. I don't know. I know Scott Frost is 0-8 against ranked teams, so they don't even have to be in the top five. Speaking of the top five, do you know who else is in the top five, Greg?
Wait a minute. 0-5 or 0-8 against top five teams. No, ranked against teams.
Ranked teams.
At Nebraska.
Yes.
Because when he was at UCF, he beat a ranked Auburn team, did he not?
I don't know. We don't care.
Oh, okay. I mean, I didn't know if you were talking Nebraska career or his overall career. Anyway, who else is in the top five, John?
Yes, who else is in the top five?
Well, it's Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And Clemson's up there?
No.
Nope.
They got beat.
Oh, that's right.
The number Georgia, two team.
Georgia's up there.
Yep.
Ohio State's not up there anymore.
Nope.
Oregon's up there.
Yep.
Oklahoma, we mentioned.
Yep.
And
number five is the only team in the nation that's beat two ranked teams.
North Dakota State.
No.
No. If look,
you don't, if, you really don't if know.
Is, if this is entrapment, I will not stand for it.
It's the only team that's beat two ranked teams in a row.
But we don't give a flying monkey about them. I can't believe we even brought them up. It's not Thanksgiving week yet, John. Don't do this to me. We get one week. We only get 1 week where we're allowed to mention them, and that's because it's called Iowa Hate Week.
Okay. I didn't say their name.
Yeah, but you wanted me to say their name. That's the con right there, Johnston.
Okay. Okay, I did a prediction video earlier on YouTube, and one of the things I'm curious that I mean, right now, I don't think the big part of this game is going to be Nebraska's defense against Oklahoma's offense. And I'm really curious to see what Eric Chenander does with our defense, because Oklahoma has two scholarship running backs. So they're a little, you know, out of guys at the running back position that they can just rely on. So if you're Oklahoma, I guess if I was Oklahoma, here's what I'd do. If I get the ball first, I'm coming out and I'm throwing and I'm attacking like a madman. And I'm looking at Nebraska and I'm saying, I'm going to explosive play you to death. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if Eric Chenander says, okay, everybody in the secondary is going to play man-to-man. We're going to cover the receivers. Or we're just going to lay back and play zone with the idea that we're not giving up big plays. We'll do that bend, not break thing. And I think that would be a chicken shit way to play defense if we're doing bend, not break. Because at that point, then we're relying on our offense to score points. And, you know, 24, 28 points against anybody. And Oklahoma's better than that. So
no, but that's
good, the interesting part of this game for me.
But that's a good question, because we know that Nebraska's defense is going to have to step up. Let me rephrase. They're not going to have to step. They're going to have to carry a little bit more of the load, because they've been the ones carrying the load since last year. I mean, since the latter half of last year. So my question would be, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, maybe this is prediction time, or it needs to be saved for prediction time, but realistically, how many points does Nebraska need to score to win?
I know the answer to that.
Okay, should we save it for – let's save it for prediction. Or is that is can you answer the question without getting into predictions?
No.
Okay, then we'll table that. We're gonna put a pin – in it, and we'll come back to that later.
Okay.
Offensively, so here's the thing, and we've been laughing about this for the last decade, right? Big 12 don't play no defense. So yeah. I think, and I feel like now we're getting back into prediction type shit.
It's okay. We're a ways into this.
Are we close enough to prediction time? That,
yeah, I mean, we probably almost could just go straight into what we think is going to happen. Okay. Yeah, why not?
All right. So I was the one speaking last. So if you don't mind, I'll keep holding the speaking stick and
keep going.
Big 12 don't play no defense. Like, we've seen some of those scores, and we've been laughing about those scores for over a decade now. You know, or at least a decade, I guess. So in a world where the Big 12 don't play no defense, and Nebraska's defense has been carrying the load, I could foresee a scenario where Connor Culp removes his head from his rectum when it matters the most.
See, he's purposely missing too. Stop it. You see how guys can talk themselves into stuff, though?
Yeah.
This is why our government makes the shitty decisions they do, is because guys are sitting around a table talking themselves into what they want to happen.
Do you feel like, so, I mean, you mentioned fantasy football earlier. I'm an old school wrestling fan. I don't watch it much anymore, like the current product or anything. It's the stuff that's on TV now. But there's a phrase that like wrestling fans use, and it's called fantasy booking. And it's taking, you know, like, okay, Hulk Hogan, who was, you know, a big star in the 80s versus like the big star of today. Well, they're never going to, you know, meet up because Hulk Hogan's had like 18 back surgeries or whatever. But you fantasy book things like that. So do you think that our politicians sit around and be like, I wonder what would happen if ... anyway, this isn't a politics show. This is a fucking football show. Connor Culp has removed his head from his butt. He's the reigning and defending Big Ten kicker of the year. Kicker, special teams, whatever. A hell of a time to shine is when you're up against the number three team in the land.
It is.
And I don't think that Nebraska is always going to get the touchdowns that they need. But I do think that Nebraska will win. I'm going to say 30-24.
That's a good score.
It's respectful, you know. That is one thing I do know about Nebraska, Oklahoma over the years is – it's not Nebraska, Colorado. You know, it's not what we've seen in the last decade with those shit fucks from fucking Iowa.
okay.
It's not malicious and hateful, but it's a rivalry of respect. You know, what I do know about the history of these two programs is when they met up, it was usually because they were some of the top teams in the land, in the country, and the winner was typically going on to play for a national championship. Yep. It was like, look, Oklahoma had their down period. Now Nebraska's in their down period. The sport is better when both teams are playing at a high level. This will be, mark my words, this will be the first signature win of the Scott Frost era.
Well, my rebuttal would say this. The Big 12 is known for not playing defense, but unfortunately Oklahoma's defense has gotten better. Two of the top normally college football contenders have lost their games already, Ohio State and Clemson. Why did they lose those games? Largely because they have a first-year quarterback. I mean, Ohio State's defense looked like holy shit against Oregon. They looked like they were completely lost. And that's because Oregon just ran some misdirection plays around their left side and their whole left side disappeared. You know, and I'd like to see that from Scott Frost this time is – you know, more misdirection, options, read plays, those stupid screen passes we hate, but stuff that is going to keep Oklahoma's defense wondering what the hell's coming next. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter what we run for offense as long as it's effective. But Oklahoma does have a second-year quarterback in Spencer Rattler. I said earlier, I don't think he's that good. You know, I think we're going to find out how good he is this time. I think I'd say this. Oklahoma is capable of scoring 45 points against us, you know, of their own points, because that's what they do. They have an explosive offense, and it's going to be difficult. Now, we're going to take 45 points, and we're going to take two turnovers away from them.
I love it.
Okay? We're going to take two turnovers away from them, and that will make it, what, 31-30, somewhere in there?
31. Okay. If they had 45, you take two scores away.
We're going to get 31. A touchdown from one of those. We're going to score 24 points of our own. And Cam Taylor-Britt is going to have a punt return for either a touchdown or close to a touchdown, which makes the score Nebraska 34, Oklahoma 31, which, I don't know, just seems fitting, some kind of, you know, divine intervention, because our morality is better than Oklahoma's, those miserable fucking bastard cheating shitheads. There you go. Talking about talking yourself into things.
First of all, everything that you said, I hope comes true, up to and including the Cam Taylor-Britt punt return. If he gets into open space, do we hear a every man, woman, and child?
We hear it from someplace, somewhere, some guy screaming in the stands.
Yeah.
Do you know how many interceptions Adrian Martinez has thrown this year? Yeah, he's thrown zero. And part of that is because I think he's been very, you know, I think what we saw against Illinois is he was very cautious about that. And it hurt us, mm-hmm. You know, against the next two opponents, he didn't really have to be that cautious. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how Adrian Martinez comes out in this game. If he's going to, you know, if they're going to run the option, if we're going to see a lot of quarterback centric runs, because he's an athlete, and I mean, he can make, you know, a lot of plays with his feet. So, but that's my prediction. 34-31 Nebraska, as God smiles on the Cornhusker State that he's neglected for so long.
I was going to say, it'd be about damn time. Well, I just want you to know, John.
Is that a power tie?
It is. I've got a couple more. You want to see him? I had to wear a tie. Oh, my
God.
What?
These are power ties. Are these required company colors?
No. We were allowed to wear any tie we chose. I brought three because I didn't know what color I'd feel like today, and I felt like red. Maybe that's an indication, John. I'm not blue.
You know the last time I wore a tie was?
Well, it wasn't your funeral because you kicked out, so... Was it your wedding?
It wasn't my mom's funeral either. I didn't wear a tie for that. I probably in the 90s. I don't – probably about the last time Nebraska beat a top five team, honestly. Maybe there's a correlation.
That mean you're going to suit up on game day? Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Thank God he's wearing pants, everybody.
Oh, God, that's true. Sometimes I'm not. It's horrifying. Okay, here you go.
Is that your tie?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a tie I got for Christmas. I don't know how to tie it, but maybe I'll wear it Saturday just for good luck. And we'll see what happens. Of course, if we win, I'd have to wear a tie all the time.
You would.
Oh, well.
So what we'll do, John, is we'll get together. We'll convene you and I Saturday morning on Zoom, and I'll show you how to tie that into a beautiful full Windsor knot.
How about if I just have my – maybe my wife would know how to tie a tie.
I mean, she is better looking than me. So if you want her to help you,
probably. Yeah.
All right, John. What a blessing and honor it is to have been able to share this time with you, sir. We miss Todd. But we miss all of our good Coronation brethren who opt not to join us for the Five Heart Podcast recording. Throw a little guilt their way. So I got this shirt today at our conference convention. It is America's Mighty Warriors. They are basically any fallen combat, you know, soldier, Gold Star, you know, families, things like that. Over the coming weeks, I'm going to have a little bit more information. This is actually a foundation that was started by the mother of the first Navy SEAL to die in Iraq back in 2006 by the name of Mark Lee. So his mother started the foundation. It is a nonprofit, and they do a lot of terrific work for veterans and even especially combat wounded veterans and the families of fallen veterans. They're actually hoping to put something together for the families of the 13 military men and women who were killed in Afghanistan recently. So I encourage anybody, throw it in your Google machine, America's Mighty Warriors. I believe it's AmericasMightyWarriors.org because it is a nonprofit. Just learn more about it, and maybe I'll have some more coherent thoughts to share with it in the near future. That's all I know, John. I appreciate you, buddy, and we'll see what happens on Saturday. Fox, big noon kickoff, Nebraska, Oklahoma, just like the glory days, except one team's trying to reclaim the glory. So for John Johnston, our founder and fearless leader, I'm Greg Mahochko. We remind you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. John?
Go Big Red!
Go Big Red.